This is Radio Kate at the World Conference of Science Journalists. I've just managed to survive the session on radio journalism that we just did, and I've come round to the exhibition area because I noticed something that looked vaguely spacey. So I've got Simon here to tell me a bit about it. It's the SKA, or do you just call it SCAR?
Well, SKA, it's Square Kilometre Array. As soon as you say SCAR, then it's music connotations, and trying to find it is very tricky.
Sounds quite fun, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what on earth is a Square Kilometre Array?
Right. So the Square Kilometre Array is a giant radio telescope. So as opposed to optical, where you look at things with visible light, we're talking about microwaves, radio frequency emission from very distant galaxies and objects in the universe that we're trying to discover. So the SKA itself is a mega project. It involves 20 countries worldwide, and at the moment South Africa and Australia are bidding to host the project. So this, I'm representing the South African bid.
And why in particular do you want to host it? Is it just for the kudos and the coolness?
No, sure. I mean, there's the many facets to it. Obviously, it's a really big, really big project, so a lot of money will be spent. But, for Africa, it's a chance to show the world, as we did with the World Cup, that, things can happen. Africa isn't a continent that you can just sweep under the table. And, it's really a chance for us to build infrastructure, build scientists. We have a massive bursary program. We've got 300 people on bursaries since we started in 2005, all in science and engineering. So it's really a really good opportunity for us to lift ourselves up by our bootstraps.
All right, so I'm going to put you to the test now. What can you tell me about the science of how this thing actually works, and what will it be used to look at?
So the way it works is, what you'll see in the field are you see antennas, dishes, radio dishes, much like, satellite TV antenna, but scaled up to large, to a large size. Fundamentally, what we're looking at are the most faint and distant objects in the universe. So the key science areas that we address, one of them is the search for neutral hydrogen, which is quiescent hydrogen gas sitting in large clumps around the universe. And in very, very large clumps, you actually get a bit of emission from it that you can study and observe with a radio telescope. And that lets us trace out the early formation stages of galaxies. So it's very much a question of how did galaxies form? Did they form? There's a top-down and a bottom-up model. Which one is right? What came first? And allied to that are questions of dark energy and dark matter. It all comes down to the densities in the universe. What is more dense than the other? And that lets us think about things like, is the universe going to expand forever? Is it going to stop? Is it going to contract? Real fundamental questions of science that get answered by the SKA.
And, why build something on Earth when we're putting telescopes up into orbit and getting past the atmosphere, which can distort a lot of the signals you pick up?
Well, fortunately for us, the atmosphere is not so much a problem. For optical telescopes, it's a big issue. For us at radio, the low frequencies of radio wave, we're talking about 1 gigahertz to 10 gigahertz, the atmosphere is pretty translucent. We don't really get a lot of attenuation from the atmosphere. If you go to higher frequencies, then you certainly need to be based in space. And so if you can afford to be on the ground, the cost savings are, immense. We're talking about building 3,000 antennas of 15 meters in diameter. Just to launch one of those would cost a kind of a Hubble level of expenditure. So, really, it's only affordable to do it on the ground.
And, is bigger always better? Why do you need so many of these dishes?
Sure, bigger is always better when radio astronomy is concerned. More computing, more dishes, more power. Essentially, the signals we're looking for are so unbelievably faint and unbelievably weak, we need a lot of collecting area. There's a statistic that's bandied about that if you collected all the energy that had been collected by radio telescopes since radio astronomy began 50 years ago, you wouldn't have enough energy to melt a snowflake. That's the kind of level of things we're talking about here.
Is that true?
It is true, yeah. These are very, 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 very faint trace signals that we're seeing. That's why you have to build these large, massive antennas just to collect the smallest amount of incoming power.
That's amazing. What a great fact. I like that. Sorry, that's just throwing me slightly off course now. I'm thinking about melting snowflakes. When you pick up these things, how do you know what you're seeing is something interesting or just, just a blip or something? If it's so tiny, it could just be anything.
Well, what we do is, this is the reason you build these telescopes out in the middle of nowhere. Much like an optical astronomer wants to build their telescopes away from sources of light, we want to build our telescopes away from sources of man-made interference. Anything, cell phones, laptops, anything man-made interferes with our signals and can generate spurious bits of data that we can't distinguish from. So that's why we build it either in Australia or we build it hopefully in South Africa, out in the near desert conditions where there's no one around.
And how long will it take to build something like this? And once it's built, how long do you have to be collecting data before you actually see something that might be useful?
Well, radio astronomy is all about, if you build a bigger telescope, you can do the same observation in a short amount of time. So the SKA will be 50 times more powerful than the current state of the art in terms of radio telescopes. It'll take something in the order of 10 years to build once they push the button, which was probably 2016, and it'll run for maybe 30 to 40 years.
So this, I mean, this is a long-term, project. What would be, I mean, you know, when we had things like the Large Hadron Collider, which is a huge international cooperation, you know, and they have the, they're looking for the Higgs boson. What's the kind of holy grail for radio?
Right.
Radio telescopes.
Sure. I mean, I think there's several. One of the holy grails would be the detection of gravity waves. So gravity waves are theoretical ripples in space-time that are surmised at any time you have massive gravitational interaction. So, for example, two black holes orbiting each other, they actually distort space-time in ripples. And so far, all we've been able to do is put lower limits on what these could be, but no one's detected them directly. If we could detect them, these would give us the earliest signatures of the Big Bang and universal formation. So that's kind of the holy grail, one of the holy grails.
How would that show up? What would you see?
So what you do is use things called pulsars. And pulsars are these rapidly spinning neutron stars that are really, really stable. And they show up like a clock. It's like a pulse that you get when you observe it. And if you have these clocks distributed widely through space, what you can do is, as a gravitational wave distorts the intervening space-time between you and the pulsar, the measured periodicity of that pulse changes slightly. And if you measure multiple of them at the same time, you can actually infer the gravity wave from that. So it's kind of subtle, but it can be done.
But I'm assuming these pulsars aren't anywhere close to Earth. So, I mean, any number of things could have got in the way. How would you know it was an effect between the two things you were looking at?
When you look at the only thing that can distort space-time is, in theory, is a gravity wave, is gravity distortion. So we're not talking about matter and other bits and pieces in the way that really won't affect this timing signal. So there's a lot of noise to be filtered out, and you have to take out all the other characteristic signals that you can see. But it is a way to, it is the only way we can currently imagine to really detect these very early, very faint gravity waves that would be the echo of the Big Bang.
So that was one. It sounded like you had another holy grail.
There's the dark matter, dark energy question. What is the baryonic content of the universe? Baryonic meaning normal matter, the stuff we're all made of. Current estimates are that's like 4% of the matter in the universe. All the stuff we can see, everything else is dark matter of a couple of 10% or so, and then dark energy of lots of percent. And exactly what that is, how it's formed, what it means, that's a holy grail type question.
And when would you hope to see those kind of results coming out? If they found something. I mean, if everything went beautifully smoothly according to plan, in the way that things often don't, when would we be getting good results from this?
I guess sort of 4 years after commencement of operations, that kind of thing. Those are the time scales for the Nobel Prize papers to be out the door, I would imagine.
Excellent. Well, very good luck on your bid. And if you manage to win it, I'm expecting vuvuzelas.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you.